The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
All right, we're going to have our pal Andrew Mason join us in just a little bit. Just to bring you up to speed with the Avalanche, and we'll have we had a great interview with Gabriel Landeskog, and we'll hear a huge chunk of that coming up in about 15 minutes. But at their practice today, I mean, really, Tyler, no bad news to share from the Avalanche point of view. They are completely healthy. Even Landeskog, who took a maintenance day yesterday, as well as Eric Johnson, both of those guys were out there. Darcy Kuemper is fine. He talked to the media yesterday. You can see maybe a little swelling, like a pullar on his eyelid.
Okay.
But, you know, he was in good spirits. He's 100%, saw him practice today. They're taking shots at him 1,000 miles an hour.
They got the whole squad, man. I mean, they got it all. Everything's in good shape right now.
You had the Suns with that epic collapse. You have the Celtics.
Thank you.
Beat the Bucks. You had overtime games left and right in hockey. So let me just ask you this real quick. Do you like the schedule finally that the Avs are on?
Well, I don't understand what the NHL was doing. I think it's dumb that they took so long to...
Isn't it funny there's no games tonight?
Yeah, it is dumb. And as I was listening to Zach and Stoke earlier, and as they pointed out, there's nothing on TV tonight.
Is that crazy?
There's nothing going on. There's no NBA. There's nothing. MLB probably doesn't have any national games on. They had an opportunity to seize the moment and be in the spotlight. I don't know why the NHL took so long. I seriously cannot figure out why they at 10, 11 o'clock last night, the schedule was not out.
Nobody knows. The players don't know. Jared Bednar has said, well, whatever advantage we have over the Blues, that's gone. Because they had 6 days off or whatever they have off.
Right.
Why couldn't they schedule the Avs and the Blues for tonight?
I have no clue. I absolutely no clue. I was wondering if it was going to be on Sunday a few days back. Then it became obvious it wasn't going to be Sunday. I thought, okay, well, surely it's going to be Monday. Nope, Tuesday, first game. Okay, all right.
Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Monday. Will it get to Tuesday again, or is it Avs in four games?
It probably gets back. I mean, they probably come back home, finish it off here. Look, a sweep is hard to pull off. I do feel like it's going to feel similar in nature to the Predator series. So whether the Blues win one game or two games, overall, I think it should be a dominating performance from the Avs.
Well, we'll catch up with Gabriel Landeskog. If you missed it, it's at DenverFan.com. But we'll have, like I said, a big chunk of you. We'll talk to the captain in just a little bit. But we do want to welcome a new member to the team, somebody that we've been around for a long time. And my man, how many little chats have we had over the years, Mace, out there at the Valley? It's been awesome.
So his name is Andrew Mason, in case anybody didn't know.
At Mace Denver on Twitter, yada, yada, yada. Hundreds, D.
Hundreds.
I mean, during practice, after practice.
Yeah.
How many times have you and I been standing in the parking lot?
So many times.
Outside of Broncos headquarters, just opining on whatever.
I know, it's been crazy.
Andrew Mason, when we were at the Hall of Fame, you dropped me off at Steve Atwater's party, and it was far. We were staying in Cleveland. It was a solid, I don't know, hour-plus drive to get back to Cleveland. I had no plan on how I was going to get home in the middle of the night. You dropped me off, and I said, I'll find an Uber or whatever. Andrew Mason took me off.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
Oh,
yes,
that's
he did.
Funny.
Yep.
I was staying in Cleveland. I was actually staying out by the airport. Tyler was downtown. It was like 10 more minutes. I mean, we had a great drive. We had a great conversation all the way back.
No, that's not the funny part. And thanks to our listeners in Commerce City for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day. No. Mace, the funny part is there's a vehicle you're comfortable driving that Tyler's comfortable sitting in.
I don't know
that's
how comfortable he was. And he had the
great
seat. Okay, you were. That's great. Because he had it all the way back. Oh, you know what? Because I'd driven over from Wisconsin, so it was a family car. It was a Lexus SUV. And so you did have plenty of space.
It was fantastic. Yeah. But, Andrew, it's so great to have you on board. You're going to be such a tremendous addition. You're now our new senior writer, taking over for John Clayton.
Senior just means old.
Yeah. No, it means you're good. That's what it means. I can't wait to have you on board, be reading all your articles. What's the big first take of this Broncos team? All right, how about this? Huh. You've seen the schedule. What is going to be the record? What would be okay? What would be a failure?
11-6 is what I have him finishing at.
Okay. I got him at 10-7.
I have him at 11-6.
Yeah. I think it's right down the middle because they're probably going to lose a game or two at some point where everyone panics. Like, what happened here?
There's going to be a two or three game slide at some point this year, and people will feel tempted to get panicked, and don't get panicked. It's about the long term, but there will be a two or three game slide in there at some point.
I mean, you happened on the Indianapolis game Thursday night, I believe you mentioned last week. And I'm with you. I think Indianapolis is a terrific team. I had the Broncos winning that game, though, because the two games before for the Colts are Chiefs and Titans. Mm. And the Titans, even though I think they'll take a step back, that's still like, if the Colts are Captain Ahab, the Titans are their white whale right now. Like they have to take them out. They lost a couple of games. A big part of why Carson Wentz isn't a Colt today, it's not just because he struggled against the Raiders and Jaguars late last year. He played miserably against the Titans at home last year. And they're looking at that game as, okay, this is why this year's going to be different. So I think they'll beat the Titans at home, and I think it's going to be an emotional game. And then they're going to come here in 4 days. Even though it's Russell Wilson Broncos, I think there might be a little bit of an emotional letdown. I actually have the Broncos losing the 49ers at home in week 3.
I got the Blues in that one also.
Yeah,
it depends on who's the quarterback, though. I don't know who the QB is going to be. I actually think it's probably going to be Jimmy Garoppolo. That's why I've got it as a loss. But if it's Trey Lance, all of a sudden that becomes a very winnable game.
Yeah, so to kind of go back to your original question, D-Mac, I think if they're in the playoffs, that's fine. You're hoping they get on a run. The playoffs, I mean, we've seen teams like the Niners last year, like Tampa Bay with Tom Brady in 2020. We've seen the Titans in 2018. We have seen teams get on a run. If this Bronco team is on the path I expect it to be, which is a little bit clunky at times early, but they really start taking flight in terms of their potential down the stretch, maybe a little bit battle-hardened by what they face in December and early January, I think they'll have a good playoff run. If they go 9-8, miss the playoffs, that's the kind of thing you're talking about as a failure for the
year. All right, let's play a game of what he said and what he means. And this is with Coach Outen talking about right tackle.
Okay.
All right? What he said, what he means.
I think we have really good options up that position. I think it's a very competitive position. It's a veteran position. So there's three guys with Billy and Tom and with Calvin. Those guys can battle it out. And I'm really excited about that position just to see how it plays out.
What he said, but what does he mean?
Oh, I know. I know what he said. What he said is we brought in two competent right tackles in Tom Compton and Billy Turner. And they're going to battle it out. And Tom was probably going to be the starting right tackle until Nathaniel Hackett brought his best friend in. And Billy Turner is now going to be the right tackle of the Denver Broncos. That's what he meant.
Mace?
Yeah. It's a similar thing. And I think even a layer beyond that is George Payton before the draft talked about how all the viable tackles who could step in were going to be gone late round one, early round two. In other words, they weren't getting to 64. So I think they looked at the draft landscape, looked at how they expected it to be, and that was part of maybe what caused Peyton Hackett to say, okay, Nathaniel, go get your guy Billy to come in and compete for the job, because they already had Tom Compton right away. And, of course, O-line coach Butch Berry had Compton in San Francisco. So Berry's got his guy, and Justin Outen and Nathaniel Hackett have their guy, and then you've got Calvin Anderson, who has been around but might have a little bit of a tough road to hoe here.
Do we think this is a real competition?
Yeah, I think it's more or less a competition, but I think it's obvious who's going to win. So is that a competition? I don't know. I thought last year was a competition with Teddy and Drew, and I stand by it. I still think it was a legit competition. I just knew who was going to win it. I think Billy Turner is going to win this one, but it's an open battle. You know, both those guys, they're good enough to win a lot of games with. They're both going to get beat a handful of times per game. But they, you know, right tackle's the spot that
it's crazy.
You don't have to have a superstar at
it.
You just have to have somebody that's not going to hurt the football
team.
Well,
we've checked that box over the years.
Well, not usually. Sometimes we've had people that are going to hurt the football team. We've had a handful of
those. Oh, I'm sorry. I've just said we haven't had superstars at that particular position.
Right.
All right. What he said, what he meant, talking about Luke Wattenberg, right? because what's happened in that position, a lot of O-line stuff here for you, Tyler. Here we go.
Well, center is the most demanding position on the line as far as just the communication aspect and seeing the whole big picture. So he'll probably start out there and we'll move him around and see how much he can handle. And he's done a really good job this camp of just showing his ability to run off the ball. You saw it in college and, you know, with the technique that Coach Barry and Chin and Coach Steele, they're over there repping him. He's buying into it and starting to connect.
What he says, what he means.
Well, what it means and what's true is that Lloyd Cushenberry, they would like to get better. They would like to find a better player or make Lloyd play better football.
Yeah, I was going to say get better or get gone.
Well, that's sort of the same thing. No, it's not get gone because they don't have a replacement. Mm-hmm. Luke's not going to replace Lloyd Cushenberry this year. He's not going to start over Lloyd.
Okay.
But Lloyd is maybe going to be in a battle with Graham Glasgow. If Graham loses his right guard spot to Quinn Meinerz, Graham's played a lot of center over the course of his career. They just got to get better at center is what they mean. Luke got hurt this weekend. He got a mid-calf strain. I'm not sure.
Oh, no, that was
Matt Henningsen.
Oh, that was okay. Okay. Yeah. My fault. But Luke's, he's not going to be pressing for any starting playing time this year. No.
Yeah, I still think they did Lloyd a disservice 2 years ago when you had him with a young quarterback. And I think it did Drew Locke a disservice as well. Kind of one of my theories is you want a veteran quarterback, young center, you can have that, mm-hmm. or a young center, veteran quarterback, like when when Matt Paradis was there in 2015, he had Peyton Manning.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
But they were both young and trying to grow at the same time, and you can see how many times you had pressure coming up the A-gaps because Drew or Lloyd didn't identify it and mm-hmm. struggled pre-snap to diagnose that.
Yeah, nobody did the checks and balances. You just didn't have that.
Right. There wasn't kind of, I hate to say this, but an adult in the room. You need kind of a vet at one of those two spots. I think there's still internally some belief in Cushenberry, but it very much is get better. Or you mentioned Graham Glasgow. I think he's, to me, the obvious guy who steps in this year if Cushenberry isn't ready. Actually, you can argue Glasgow's best season in Detroit was actually at center.
All right, so Quinn Meinerz is a center like he was last training camp. That's we're done with that, right? Quinn Meinerz is guard. That's it, the end?
I think so. You know, if he's not a starting right guard, then he will play both positions.
Because tried that out a lot in training camp last year.
And I thought that was a huge mistake last year. Quinn was coming in from a D3 school. He didn't understand football. Mm-hmm. And to put him at the spot center that requires the most knowledge from a football IQ standpoint, I thought that was doing him a disservice. Just put him at right guard, let him go out there and play football. That's probably the way it's going to work out. He didn't look great at center. If he's not a starter, though, he will have to be the backup center and the backup guard, because you only dress one on game day.
All right, Mace, what's going to be your first article if it's not written? It's coming soon.
It's actually up at denverfan.com right now, diving into some of the things that Joe Buck and Troy Aikman said about Russell Wilson, kind of the three things they expect from Russell Wilson, and even at the end, kind of get into some of their comments about Seattle, Drew Locke. They didn't really talk much about Locke, but it's interesting how they view Seattle there in week one. Pete Carroll trying to kind of play back to the future here, go back to his original plan when you were there.
Yeah.
D and running game.
Is Drew Locke the starter day one?
I think it's going to be Geno.
Oh, that'd be a bit of a buzzkill. It would. I mean, it's going to be a great story no matter what.
No,
it's about Russell Wilson. But
he's going to beat out Geno. He's a better athlete than Geno Smith.
I hope he beats out Geno Smith. If he doesn't, then
hey, Geno's an incumbent. Drew has to beat him out. Don't forget that.
Drew's a pretty good athlete, guys. I mean, come on. He's going to win that battle. It's going to take some games for him to go sideways.
Is Teddy Bridgewater and Geno Smith, are they not comparable?
You want to tell me that's the same situation?
Well, Teddy's better, but I think it's a very similar situation for sure.
All right, we'll read all about it at denverfan.com. We're looking forward to all the conversations, Mace, and it's awesome to have you on board.
It's awesome being with you guys.
All right.
Great to have you, man. Seriously fired up about
earlier,
it.
Earlier today, boy, that was fun having Gabe Landeskog on, huh?
Tremendous. Gabe, man, it gave some really great insight. He's a great interview. Just a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I know in regular press conference scenarios, a lot of these guys, you know, you don't hear a whole heck of a lot of their personality.
Yeah.
I think we learned a lot and could feel a lot from Gabe Landeskog when we talked to him earlier today. Gabe, how are you today?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you being on. You know, I was talking to Tyler here just briefly, and I know you weren't back with the team quite yet, but there was a moment late in the season before the Blues in the regular season that there was a need for some of the leaders to stand up and just get everybody's attention. Can you talk about, and then you guys came out and did it, you know, against the Blues right then and there. And it just felt like that was just like a check, just a little check about not to lose our focus and to be on point for what we really have left in the year. What was that all about?
Well, I think sometimes the regular season, it's so long, and it really is a marathon, and so is the playoffs in a way. But the regular season is a different animal, and I think for us, when we had spent so much of that playing some really, really good hockey and getting some really good results, and then towards the end of the year, we were jockeying for position with Florida, obviously, for the President's Trophy, and we had kind of secured home ice through the first three rounds already. And some of those games can sometimes be a little tricky for players because nobody wants to get hurt. You want to keep your habits tight and your systems tight, but that extra juice isn't always quite there. So that was just some things were slipping, and it was just a matter of getting guys kind of dialed in again and making sure that we're really creating some winning habits and keeping our structure tight heading into the playoffs. And I think the guys did a really good job of that. It wasn't maybe the last 15 games the way we wanted to play them, but at the same time, you know, once you get in the playoffs, it's a new season, and you just got to make sure your habits and stuff like that is tight, and I think the guys done a good job of that.
Well, you guys certainly created some winning habits in the first round there, but, you know, you're going up against a team that you've got recent history with from last year. Actually, why don't we just start right there? Is there any bad blood left with the Blues from last year?
Well, I think, I mean, it's a division opponent, right? And a lot of those guys have been around for a long time, and we've matched up against them for years now. And obviously with the playoffs last year, that, you know, it doesn't take much for you to start creating some hate against the guys you play against in the playoffs.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if it's four games or seven games, you end up disliking them towards the end of it anyways. So, you know, but at the same time, it's a different season. They got a different team. We got a different team. And I'm sure they're going to be hungry to get some revenge and get us back. And we want to keep moving. We don't want them to be standing in our way in our quest for cups. So it should be a good series. And we're excited to get going here after some time off.
You know, Gabe, it feels like the outside opinion is that when you play the Avalanche, your best shot is to get physical. How do you guys walk that line of protecting yourselves, playing tough, yet making sure to skate away, like Coach Bednar said, when you can, knowing that teams are going to, they're going to be coming after you trying to get physical?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If teams want to play that way, that's fine. You know, we can handle ourselves physically. And you saw against Nashville, especially game one, that was clearly their game plan, and it didn't end up working out well for them. You know, we try to stay focused on what we got to do, and we like to play fast and with pace and get teams kind of stuck on three-quarter ice in their zone and just keep coming in waves, and that's the way we want to play. And it's hard playing that physical style of game, scrumming it up after whistles. It gets exhausting after a while, and I think it's nothing that we want to necessarily get into, but we can definitely handle our own.
Yeah, it was interesting against Nashville because I think they realized, Gabe, if they're going to get physical with you guys, they're just going to end up in the box. It's not to their benefit. And the toughest game they really played, I would say, would be game four, when they really did kind of back off and play a different style of hockey against you guys. And it worked for a little bit. I love, too, the fact that, you know, it was, I mean, you only trailed for 5 minutes in the whole series.
Yep.
But, you know, the story goes that you kind of yelled at the guys a little bit when you got down and straightened everything up. At least that's what Kale said. And maybe you can take us through that. I mean, it was only 5 minutes. But, I mean, maybe you can take us through those moments where you just had to just snap back into it for a second.
Well, I think, I mean, we talk about it all the time, but playoffs is all about momentum. And momentum shifts in hockey is a funny thing, because once you have the momentum on your side, you want to, how do you keep it? And then once it's against you and the other team's got it, how do you snap out of it? And for us, that was just kind of a period in time where we weren't skating that hard. Everybody was kind of watching what the puck carrier was doing, and we weren't really connected like we normally, like we try to be. So that was just a TV timeout that I felt like it was a good opportunity to just get the guys dialed back in, because sometimes it can, you know, especially on the road, buildings loud and things like that, it can be hard once they start tilting the ice in their favor that snap out of it. But we were able to, guys responded really well, and we were able to, you know, push back the other way, start skating, getting on loose pucks again, start winning battles.
Yeah.
And it ended up working out in our favor, and it was a big game four win for us. So looking to kind of pick up where we left off in terms of that series. I thought we did a lot of good things, and we know this is going to be a different series. It's not going to be easy by any means. It's a really tough team we're playing against, and you know, this St. Louis Blues team, they got 8 or 9 20-goal scorers this season. That's some serious depth, so it'll be a good test for us and a good challenge.
You know, Gabe, it's you personally, I think it's remarkable because, sure, if you're up with Val and or rather Miko and Nate, you know, that line's unbelievable, right? I mean, incredible. But the fact that you are on a different line, I don't even want to say second line because that's not what it is, because your depth is so ridiculous. But it does feel like it was unique to get Berkey some confidence, to get Val some confidence, right? To mix things up. And perhaps that meant not a sacrifice on your part, but maybe a different role to be on, I guess I'll roll my eyes and say, the second line. I wonder if you can philosophically talk about your responsibility and what you think you need to bring to that unit.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's a part of trying to win. I mean, everybody has to accept their role, whatever it is, and do whatever you have to do to help the team win. And I think, you know, we have the luxury of being able to mix lines up and being able to, you know, sometimes you put Val on that top line with Nate and Miko, and sometimes, you know, you can put Berkey up there and maybe me and Val together with Nas, or, you know, there's a bunch of different combinations. And Lekki, Arturi Lehkonen, has been an amazing addition to our team. He's just kind of a Swiss Army knife that you can fit in anywhere, and he's going to, you know, and he's going to create, and he's going to create havoc, and he's going to get in on a forecheck. And I think everybody would do that in that situation, is, you know, just accept what you have to do to make the team better. And I think that's what we're all trying to do, is we're all trying to pull the rope the same direction and, you know, understand that we're a very dangerous team. We're not a one-line team, you know, we're a very deep team, and we can, you know, we can hurt you in many different ways. And I think to have the depth and to spread it out, I think it's a luxury. And sometimes you put a certain line together and they're just rolling. So you want to keep that going. And I felt like the connection me, Nas, and Lekki had in that round against Nashville, I think it's something we want to build off of and
no
get
doubt.
Them better.
Do you have to watch Kadri's back? Do you feel responsible for that or not?
Nah, he can handle his own, but I mean, I would stick up for Nas just like I would stick up for anybody else on our team, and I know he would have my back if need be. So he's a tough guy that's been tested a lot. You know, he's put himself in some tough situations in the past, but at the same time, that's the past. And you know, we're in 2022. Nas has grown a lot, and he's been a blast to play with, and to see how he's played the season has been awesome, and he's been huge for us. So, you know, it's something we're looking forward to keep going and just keep building off of that.
All right, Gabe. Well, man, we love talking with you, and boy, you're such a incredible, iconic Colorado sports figure, and well, it'll be rocking, and it'll be great to have you guys back in action tomorrow night. And so thank you for the time, and best of luck against the Blues.
Go do it again, buddy.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Always a pleasure.
There's our guy, Gabe Landeskog, and you can visit more with Gabe. That was just a portion of the conversation at DenverFan.com. By the way, don't lose in the NHL, Tyler, as Peter DeBoer was fired today as the head coach of the Golden Knights. That's after taking his team to the playoffs year after year after year. You miss the playoffs, you're out.
Look, I got a coffee bet with James Barilat that we won't be able to have this conversation. James thinks that he will still be calling for Bednar's job, even if they lost in the next round, he'd still be calling for it. I said you're not going to have the luxury, you're not going to have the ability to call for it, but I got to give James this: nobody moves on from head coaches quicker than hockey. And even though Jared Bednar just got a contract extension, if they had a disappointing second round here, it would be in the conversation. It would be.
Game one tomorrow night, 7:30 on TNT. All the games on national TV. Game two Thursday. Game three on Saturday in St. Louis. And then on Monday. And will that be it? Who knows? But we've got you covered with the Avalanche. Mission 16W right here on Denver Sports Station 104.3. The Fan, Mount Columbus Speak, comes up next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.
From the banks of Cherry Creek to the Flatirons of Boulder, to the South Stands of Mile High. He's the state of Colorado's native son. A man of mythical and physical proportion. University of Colorado Buffalo's team captain. Denver Broncos Super Bowl 50 champion. He is Mount Palumbus. Who dare attempt scale the mighty Mount Palumbus on this day?
Mount Palumbus Speak is presented by Plumline Services. Turn to the experts you trust. I have a question for Mount Palumbus.
But all right,
first,
let's go.
We'll go to our boy Tim in Farmington, New Mexico. Mount Palumbus, how can you take Nathaniel Hackett seriously? I know my wrestling, baseball, and football coaches were terrifying. They made me respect them. They weren't my buddies. I never was a pro. Is it different in those ranks?
Mount Palumbus.
That is a totally legitimate question. It's one that I've asked myself. Is this who Nathaniel Hackett is? Like, is he just a goofball all the time? And you can't be. And if you were to be a goofball all the time, if you were to just be this fun-loving guy that's out there cracking Will Ferrell jokes, at some point, you would lose respect of your head coach. Like, hey, man, we got to tighten things up. This is hard. This is a very serious sport. I mentioned a little bit earlier that I got to hang out with Mason Crosby this weekend. I asked him that specifically. Is that just who he is? Like, is this who he is? He said, no. Like, he just knows the right time to have fun. He's the counterbalance. But he's really a very calming force. When things are going wrong, when things are going right, either way, he's a very calming force that's out there. So Nathaniel Hackett, he's got a great opportunity to become friends with players, which sounds dangerous. You don't want to be friends with the players too much. Mm-hmm. But if you could be friendly in nature, yet have the respect as being their superior, that is a combination that I only had one coach that ever pulled that off. That was Dan Quinn.
Okay.
The only coach that I've ever been able to say, like, yeah, he was my buddy. Like, Mike Shanahan and I, like, I got nothing but respect for him. We're friends for sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it wasn't like go out and grab a beer and hang out at night type of thing, right?
Right.
Nathaniel Hackett's got a unique opportunity for that. I think it's a fair question, one that I'm not totally convinced of myself. All the stuff that we love about Nathaniel Hackett, it'll be the first things that we point to. If they go on a 3 or 4 game slide and they're out there dancing and having fun at practice and being goofballs, we'll point at that as a negative. Right now it's a positive. It can become a negative, but I felt comforted hearing from Mason Crosby just how important Nathaniel Hackett was to the Green Bay Packers.
What you make of, this is my question for Mount Palumbus.
Yeah.
And I know I'm catching up here, but from afar, listening to the Jerry Jeudy stuff, okay? Let me just give you my take from afar, okay?
Good.
I felt myself saying, what's the big deal here? Not to take anything lightly in terms of domestic situations, but I felt myself leaning towards, he spent a night in jail for that?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you fall on it? And if I'm misreading it or getting it wrong somehow, straighten me out here. Like, what should I know?
Well, it was a very crazy 24 hours. And you know, the day that it broke, the headline read very, very bad. Mm-hmm. And it read Jerry Jeudy was arrested for I can't remember the specific language of it, but it was a domestic situation that with a domestic violence enhancer. That's what it was.
Okay.
And you know, it was unique because the sheriff's department, they held a presser that day, and James and I were on air, and we felt like after we listened to it, we were like, man, I think they held that presser because they wanted everybody to understand that Jerry Jeudy did not put his hands on a woman. Like, that was not what happened there.
Yeah,
I mean, in the big picture, it doesn't feel like this is the worst of offenses that you've ever heard of. But it is a big deal for Jerry Jeudy because this is Jerry Judy's probably his last opportunity to be a superstar in the NFL. It's his last one. He could play in the NFL for 8 or 10 years as a rotational reserve player. But if he wants to be the superstar that he was drafted to be, This is his last crack at it. If you can't make it work with Russell Wilson, you'll be slotted for the rest of your career just as a rotational guy. So it's a bigger deal for Jerry Jeudy with his personal relationships with people that are new, with Russell Wilson that is new, with Nathaniel Hackett that is new. I don't think anybody's going to look at Jerry Jeudy and say, hey, I don't want to be on your team. It's not like a gross, ugly situation like Deshaun Watson where, like, honestly, teammates might be uncomfortable being teammates with him, right? I don't think that's what it is, but unfortunately, it's just another huge distraction. It's a huge headline that popped up that it was a nationwide story. I don't think that it felt like something he should have spent the night in jail for, but it's just the way the law worked. He had to see a judge. He got booked at like 3 o'clock. They couldn't see a judge that day, and because it was a no-bond situation, they had to wait till the morning before he could see the judge.
You know, it's always scales, isn't it? How good are you versus how much of a pain in the butt you are, right?
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, that's it.
Of course.
So the rules are not equal.
Antonio Brown broke those rules 100 different times, and he got 100 different opportunities because he was a superstar.
So where do you think that scale is with Jerry Jeudy right now in terms of how good he is compared to what kind of a pain in the butt he is?
Well, they're still holding out hope. But he's getting dangerously close to if there are more off-the-field distractions than there are on-the-field superstar moments, then eventually that stuff will catch up with you. I think that there's still enough hope with Jerry Jeudy that this probably is going to be a little bump in the road for him in regards to the Denver Broncos. I don't know what the legal situation will be. I don't know if the NFL will get involved or not. But I don't think this is going to, he's not going to lose his spot on the team because of it, anything like that.
Right.
But this is the type of stuff that it adds up. If you don't produce at some point, eventually, you know, if Tyler Palumbus, if I got a DUI my rookie year, guess what? I was chop city. I was out. No way would I ever play another down in the NFL. But if a superstar starter did, well, there's a little bit more leeway. Jerry still has got that hope and that potential based off of, he was supposed to be the best wide receiver in the best wide receiver class in history.
Jeez, I got another kind of tricky question for you, because that incident came out the same day as the schedule release, correct?
Yeah, it did. It did. We were live on air. We had a whole show planned about the schedule release. And up until 5:55, when we passed it off to Nick and Cecil, all we were talking about was Jerry Jeudy.
Couple of the Muggles out on, I'll keep the Muggles' names out of this one, we're debating whether or not he should have been edited out of the schedule release video. He was in it, not necessarily featured, but him and KJ Hamler were in it. Do you think he should have been taken out of that that video?
First off, I don't think that they, I guess in theory they had the option to not release the video. I don't know that they, and they could have just cut out that scene for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's a
tricky one, huh?
That's a tricky one. You want to presume innocence until they're proven guilty, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So if you cut the guy out, nobody would have known that you cut him out at the time. That's a tricky one. I'm not sure where I stand.
I'm not sure either. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but it was like, wow, that the timing of it was like, whoa.
I mean, you always got to take domestic situations serious.
Of course.
And you certainly, you know, it's not our job to be the moral police of who is right or wrong, but I do feel like this is not the type of situation that is going to put his job in jeopardy or anything even close to it.
All right. Well, I want to talk to you about the video. I'm catching up on everything. And by the way, and this is the absolute last time I'll talk about it, but my brother did pass away from, and that's why I was gone last week trying to support the family. We talked about it at length. It's posted at denverfan.com, so don't need to rehash everything. I'll be off the show on Thursday and Friday this week, going back home. And then, you know, happily for me, because I love doing this, and believe me, this is the world's best escape, I'll be in St. Louis covering the Avalanche and the Blues over the weekend. And I thank you, everybody, for your the outpouring of emotion. Tyler's been just so supportive, so fantastic. I'm so grateful for it. So if you do want to hear details, denverfan.com. And I thank you for that. Okay. Do game balls. Wrap things up. Coming up next.
It's The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
The only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's
so nothing tonight, huh? Is that weird?
It is weird. It's dumb.
Game 7s and overtimes and blowouts, and now tonight there's Sensatella on the bump.
It's just dumb. It's dumb. I mean, all weekend there was great sports going on, competitive sports going on. Avalanche, not Avalanche, but the NHL, they didn't release the dates of the games. And what time did that finally come out? I don't even know.
Man.
I mean, it was after 10 o'clock last night.
It was after the Stars, and that went to overtime.
Yeah.
Calgary and the Stars.
Yeah. So NHL had an opportunity to put Colorado Avalanche on primetime in front of everybody tonight without anything on TV. And they should have done that. There's no question they should have done that.
Well, whatever. I mean, at this point. And the Avs did talk about rust and... What are you going to do, though? I mean, what are you supposed to do? They had a pretty vigorous practice yesterday. Not quite as intense, but they were on the ice again today. They had Saturday off. They had 2 days off after the Nashville series.
Yeah.
And this is crazy in terms of downtime for a hockey team. But they are 100% healthy. It was great talking to Darcy Kemper yesterday, by the way. And he's always in a very upbeat, generous mood. But he kept his answers very short, very to the point. And, yeah, okay, maybe you could see a little swelling above his kind of like his right eyelid, Tyler, but he's fine. He's 100%.
You know,
not very lucky.
Oddly enough, I actually feel comforted, right? Like this time off that normally would bother me, and there's still a part of me that's wondering, like, hey, are they going to come out a little bit rusty? Was the time off a good thing or bad thing? But oddly enough, I actually feel comforted by the fact that the Avalanche they struggled the end of the year, and you know it's whether that was sort. I'm not saying they were trying to lose games, but whether it was sort of intentional, like rest some guys, take a little bit time off. You know, we don't have to go as hard here or not. I know this. I saw that the Avalanche have got the ability to turn the switch on when they want to turn the switch on. And when they showed up for that Nashville series and they dominated the way they did, I realized, okay, they turned it off for the end of the season and they turned it back on. And that gives me a little bit of comfort with this time off that, hey, these guys, they're pros. They know how to turn it on when they need to turn it on.
Well, let me give you a pinch of a hot take on this one. And that is they are not going to be bothered in a negative way by their failures in the second round in the past. I think they'll know it. They'll sort of feel it, but I don't think it's going to be something that they'll be ripping on. And I think they win in 5 games.
I think it'll be a part of it. I think they'll feel it. I don't think it's something that they're afraid of. I think it could be motivational in nature, like the Jacksonville game was for the Broncos years and years ago. They come back and you dominate the next year. You know, most of the time, I don't equate anything that happened the year before with the current team because it's a new roster. It's new guys. It's a new era. But the Avalanche, they do have a bit of a dynasty era going on right now. And the majority of the superstars, they were around last year. They were on that team. So I think that it could be a good thing. It could be a motivational thing. It could be a reminder. Hey, even if we get up 1 or 2-0 on the Blues, remember what happened last year.
Do you think the Blues, even though they've met a few times, Tyler, do you think they try to get under Kadri's skin?
Of course.
Right away?
I mean, I don't know about Kadri specifically, and I know why you asked the question, obviously.
That's where it all started.
But I think that's just the game plan. When you play the Avalanche, your only hope is to out-physical him, to try to do dumb things. The Avalanche are so good on their power plays, that's when teams just die. When the Avalanche go on their power plays, they just die. It's over. They capitalize. They seize the moment. And teams know that they got to bait that out of the Avalanche, try to get them in the box, not the other way around. So maybe they'll try to do it with Kadri. I've got no fear of Kadri doing something stupid. It's clearly on his mind. Gabe told us today they're not worried about him. They're not worried about that. They got his back. But I do think that that's the style of play that the Blues are going to be going after, is a good physical, after the play's over, lots of scrums and all of that.
Yeah, it's funny because they have played each other a couple of different times, obviously. And Kadri did fight, by the way. He did. He answered to, you know, who he thought he had to answer to. McKinnon and Landeskog earlier today spoke about that. Like, I think it's done. I think that's all been addressed, that sort of thing. It just does make me wonder in the playoff scenario, will the Blues try to do that again? Also, another one real quick. Nathan McKinnon was asked about his relationship with Ryan O'Reilly, and he pointed out, now this blew me away, It's been 7 years since they played together on the same team.
It's a long time.
But it feels like yesterday that Ryan O'Reilly was here.
That's
but
a career.
It's so long that that doesn't seem to be a factor either.
Well, yeah, I mean, you had Matt Duchene in the Predator series, and now you've got Matt. I mean, it feels like that's still current, but for a lot of those guys on the Avalanche, they certainly weren't teammates with them.
Right, so there's no longer an O'Reilly factor.
Ah, there you go. Well, let's hope so, D-Mac. That feels like that's one of those lines that might come back to bite you. I hope not. You've been known for that. D-Mac, it's been great to have you back, my man.
Great to be back.
I will honor your wishes to move on, but just know that we all love you. We're with you, and everybody loves you, man. So great to have you back. We're sitting here talking about the Avalanche. You asked me about round two if I got fears. I got no fears. And part of that was having Gabriel Landeskog on the show today. Man, game ball goes to Gabe. This is, you know, what a cool story. A guy that was out towards the end of the year, and you're waiting for him to come back. You're hoping he's going to be ready to rock and roll by the time you get to the playoffs. Not only has he been ready to rock and roll, what a kind of cool story it is on a team full of superstars. You put Gabriel Landeskog anywhere in the NHL, he could be a superstar. But he plays in the second line as a captain for the Avs. He's a heartbeat guy. He's a glue guy. He's got a lot of fun energy. And he made me feel confident today because he talked about the talent that they've got on that team. And he talked about all the weapons they've got. And they're not afraid of knowing how good they are. Hey, you want to come at us and try to get physical? Cool. How'd that work out for Nashville? Didn't work out for you guys, right? Just hearing Gabriel Landeskog talk today, he didn't do it in a cocky, arrogant type of way. He did it in a confident way. That gave me a lot of confidence going into this series. I already had it. But just hearing the way that guy talked, I feel great about the Colorado Avalanche. I cannot wait to watch them tomorrow. It's going to be a blast. D-Mac, you're going to be on the road again for the road games. You always do a great job of keeping us all up to date on that. Game ball goes to Gabriel Landeskog for coming on the show, being a fantastic interview, and being a heartbeat type of guy for the Colorado Avalanche. D-Mac, thanks. Hey, Colin filled in today on the board. Richie's kind of back in the saddle a little bit. There we got Richie. He's in the three-piece and all. He's back in the saddle helping out today. Kevin and KJ, we're off. We got Nick and Cecil coming up next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.